The volume.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Any, you know, because we can't start anything until Brian Kenny is ready. That's always been.
When did that start?
I mean, it was
that.
Over. No, it was at DAZN. You were affectionately known as the diva of DAZN.
And really? I didn't. Yeah, I'm unaware of all these things. Now that I'm not working with you, I'm hearing a lot more now.
We had to make sure you were properly prepared on set, that, you know, the person that kept your, the paper in front of you had it set up. So, you know, whatever instructions were there, like where you were going to go with stuff. Sometimes the paper fell down and you look at the stage manager and go,
I want people to do their job, Chris. I thought you'd appreciate that, given your working class background.
I do want people.
Do your job. What do you do here?
Any critiques of my scorecard before we start? Just
of which? Have you already scored the main event?
I haven't scored the main event.
Who got 7-5?
I've always told people that my favorite Brian Kenny scorecard moments are not when you actually question the scorecard. It's what people can't see, which is your mannerisms when you're doing it. It's like you kind of give a little head tilt sometimes.
Like, huh, interesting. Like, huh, that's right. Huh. I wouldn't have gone that route. Like, no, you should know. And people should know. I think this is mischaracterized because we worked with people that thought even. I think it's because if people aren't ingrained in the boxing culture the way we are and the way I've been for 35 years, I've come to this, you know, epiphany of scoring in boxing that it's even more subjective than we even recognize it to be. So when you say I gave that round to Ugas, I might just say, my first thing is, how convinced are you that it's Ugas? Because that's the next thing. Because the reason you're being the unofficial judge, or that Marcos Villegas, who does it for us over at Fox now, right, who does an excellent job, and I'll also say you do an excellent job, but Marcos is just scoring the fight.
Right.
Yeah, you're speaking, trying to give some context. And usually it's wider context to how the fight was made, what future fights could be made, what's the landscape of the division, and you're scoring the fight at the same time, which is not a great idea. Not optimal. It's fine. And all you are is there to tell the viewer the way you think it should go down. And so when you scored any round, I might say, are you sure about that? Not thinking you're a dummy, but just thinking, how convinced are you? And we started doing the yellow shade instead of just going a 10-9 round. If you shade like three rounds, then you say, hey, you know, I have it this way, 7-5, but you could swing it back so the other guy wins 8-4, and it's not, oh, they're inept, they're corrupt, oh, more a black guy for boxing. No, stop with that. It's difficult. And again, I'll bring it back to, you know, the first fight that I thought was the best example was De La Hoya Mosley 1, which would be Mosley De La Hoya 1. And in that fight, remember, Oscar was planned an investigation, was going to launch it, was so controversial. And we're like, that's not controversial. It's close. And I know because I went back and I rescored that fight again and again. Two guys with world-class hand speed clashing at the highest level, extremely competitive. Mm. Two guys will clash, and this is to think of Mosley De La Hoya together the first time. They would, that was when they were using their feet, too. They were moving, and then they disengage. Mm-hmm. And now, as a judge, what just happened? You know what? You can't count the punches. You can't figure out who got the better of it. They don't know who got the better of it. And then over 3 minutes, they'll do that 15 to 20 times, mm-hmm. and you're supposed to know exactly who got the better of it. There's so many fights, and that's why I've seen some clunkers of scorecards on Fox the last couple of weeks.
We'll get into that. Yeah.
I've seen some terrible scorecards, and yet I hope you notice, and I hope people out there notice, I temper my comments, given my experience, to say, okay, did I see something wrong? You know, did you, Chris Mannix, get into a groupthink with me and Sergio? Did I do it with Lennox and Joe Goosen? Mm. Perhaps we convinced ourselves of a certain something, and those people who are not listening to the broadcast saw it very differently. Were they right? Mm. So I try not to get nuts. And yeah, your scorecard's good, but I said the same thing to Teddy Atlas. When I was on ESPN, you're watching, you're calling the fight, and now you're going to score it? It's too difficult. I try not to get too crazy.
You went out on top, though. Our last fight working together, I'll never forget, the first round, you spent about 15 seconds after the first round saying, look like Canelo did what he wanted to do there, yada, yada. Let's check out Chris's scorecard. It was 10-9 Callum Smith.
Did you really?
First round, yes. It's good. Okay.
Interesting. That's not how it happened. But okay. What did I say?
I don't know. It was something like, and I just remember starting, because what you don't hear, you never hear, is our producer at that time, Dave Harmon, likes to get in my ear every time you suggest that there's something erratic about my scorecard. And he'll go, that's one.
Well, listen, that was, speaking of Dave Harmon, he worked for probably 25 years with Harold Letterman. Harold Letterman was an excellent judge.
Brilliant.
And yet, of course, we all know Harold through the years on HBO, where you'd say, whoa, you didn't get that one right, Harold. You can just, you know, kind of either miss it or
Harold loved the aggressors.
See
he
it
loved
different.
The aggressive fighters.
So it's not only subjective, which is something we always say. I'm saying what we even our ability to process what happened in the ring and the damage that was done in or scoring blows in a scoring area is exceedingly difficult because we're doing mental math in our head for 3 minutes with high speed data collection in front of us. Mm. And what I'm saying is humans are basically incapable of doing it. Even on like the most controversial scorecards, Pacquiao Bradley won, which everyone thought was the worst decision ever, and I did not see it that way. Mm. I went back and rescored the fight, and I said, okay, I'm completely comfortable with my card. But there are times where you can look back and go, well, I didn't know if I'd seen it that way. Mm. Now I'm going to go back and watch Canelo Callum Smith so I can say, geez, what was Mannix doing?
Go back out after the
or maybe you're right. Or maybe you were right. Maybe we have an expectation. And actually, all it comes down to is not who's showing ring generalship and who's owning the geography. Mm. How many scoring blows are you landing?
Yeah.
And how much damage are you doing? That's actually what the sport is supposed to be about and what the judging comes down to.
Completely. All right, Brian Kenny is here, Fox Sports pay-per-view on Saturday. Manny Pacquiao against Jordanes Ugas for the welterweight title. We were all kind of excited about Pacquiao-Spence. That was a big deal, kind of a king-making moment for Spence, last stand for Pacquiao. But this is a real fight. You know, credit to PBC for having Ugas as the co-main event, ready to step up. Ugas is a legitimate world champion. He is a legitimate top fighter. As you look at this main event, what's the biggest wild card for you? What's the question that you have, the unknown that you're waiting to see play out in the ring?
Well, there's a number of things. One is Pacquiao's age, obviously, which looked like a fait accompli 2 years ago when he fought Thurman, but it was not, right? Mm-hmm. So now we're expecting, so we'll see that version of Pacquiao. Whoa, it's 2 years later. Maybe we won't. Then again, maybe we will. Maybe he is just more of an ageless guy, and he's defied everything that binds human beings to the earth to this point anyway. So maybe he is kind of that same springy Pacquiao. Freddie Roach seems extremely confident. Pacquiao, I talked to him this week. He seems extremely confident. Maybe they're fooling themselves. Maybe they're not. So that's the first thing, the age. The other part is, Ugas is world class, man. And the last three fights he's had, he's fought guys, was it Mike Dallas was one, right? He's fought guys that I liked, right? Abel Ramos. And he's beaten these guys easy. I mean, easy. He is smooth with a double jab. He has real pop. So he's kind of like an Arislandi Lara, right-handed version, with power, which is a great, great fighter. So that's the question is he just going to, like, just really a younger guy? He's not that young, but he's much younger than Pacquiao. Is his ability to box, you know, will that just carry the day? And will Pacquiao actually not be able to solve that puzzle, even regardless of being 42? Very possible. And I think, you know, you're dead on with your sensibility. Once you get past the disappointment of, oh, Spence Pacquiao, that was so great. Mm-hmm. It's okay, he's fighting Ugas. Oh, that's a great fight, and Ugas could win that fight, no question.
No question about it. And I believe the age thing is the biggest variable in all this. 2 years removed from his last fight, yep. 42 years old. At some point, Father Time comes a calling for you. I'm less concerned about the idea of switching from southpaw to orthodox, that thing. It's like when people ask LeBron James about how what defenses are throwing at you. You've seen everything. So it's not like something's going to confuse you.
He's truly not concerned about that. And in fact, this is just more of kind of a stable, conventional boxer. Again, I thought Manny and Freddie Roach were oddly confident this week. Now it's their job to feel confident. Mm-hmm. The way they were portraying it, and Freddie saying, "I think he stops this guy." I'm like, "Really? Okay." You know, Manny usually hasn't stopped guys like this for a while. Mm. Not at 147, given that he probably should be fighting at 130. Mm. You know, so he usually doesn't do that. But they're very confident. But the Ugas I've seen, again, he's won 11 of 12, and yep. the one he lost, he probably didn't lose to Sean Porter.
Yep.
And that's Sean Porter who lost razor close to Errol Spence. And, I mean, some people thought he won that fight, mm. right? So Thurman, Porter, Ugas are basically at the same level. And maybe that's a hair below Spence and Crawford. Maybe, maybe not. We won't know until we see everybody with a steady diet of each other. Mm. And we've only started to see that, you know, with Spence fighting Porter, which was a barn burner of a fight.
Does this, and look, it's a better conversation if it was Pacquiao versus Spence, but if Pacquiao beats Ugas at 42, as you start to create your mythical pound-for-pound list of all time, like, does that elevate him even more in your mind, beating a guy like Yordanes Ugas? Or do you have to beat Spence to kind of take that big leap to the next level?
No, if Pacquiao is an all-time great, and I don't know where exactly, if he doesn't move up to fight Oscar De La Hoya. Mm. Like, he's there with Eric Morales and Marco Antonio Barrera. Mm. Think of that. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's like one of the great, you know, featherweights and junior lightweights of all time.
Freddie had a good line to me earlier. Freddie's like, people come up to me and say, I've got the next Manny Pacquiao. There will be no other Manny Pacquiao. The 8-weight division world champion,
yeah.
There will not be another fighter that does that.
Are you buying the 8? Like,
Can we not do that?
How about eight
weight classes kind of moving up?
Legitimately.
Like, you know,
there are weight classes he's never been the real champion. But, all right, so what, right?
I'm not going down this rabbit hole with you, Mr. Lineal.
I'm not doing that. No, but it's, but you know what?
We did this with Kovalev Canelo. We're not doing this again.
Let me give you an example. All right, here's where you're wrong. And where, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have to assume the responsibility of keeping things in
check. Brian Kenny told me I'm wrong. This feels oddly familiar.
Like Victor Ortiz now is in there. And it's Victor Ortiz, former welterweight champion. Was Victor Ortiz ever the welterweight champion?
Well, he was the WBC champion, wasn't
he? Come on. He was the champion.
He beat Berto for that?
He beat Berto. Think of what you just said. While Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather are in the division, is he really the welterweight champion?
No. Like, there, you can... But it's hard to kind of say, all right, during the time Pacquiao and Mayweather were in the division not fighting each other, who was the welterweight champion?
Right, because also if Mayweather had never retired and that sort of thing, it's like, no, he's the champ. I really try to observe the obvious champ because there are so many things. Look, I can go back to, you know, Livingstone Bramble and, you know, Ray Mancini. Livingstone Bramble. But you know, back in the 70s and 80s, there were two champs, like, in each division.
Frantically Googling Livingstone Bramble.
And it seemed confused. You don't remember Livingstone Bramble?
I don't remember Livingstone Bramble.
Oh, my God.
That sounds like a Dickens character.
Livingstone Bramble beat Mancini for the lightweight title. Right. And I was in the gym in Catskill with Livingstone Bramble. Like, years later, he came in. Yeah. I didn't spar with Bramble. He was in pretty good shape. You don't remember Livingstone Bramble? Yeah, look him up. By the way, you know, world champion. But back in the old days, Chris, there were two champions, and it was hard enough to try to figure out. But at least you could say, hey, while these two guys were, you know, because remember, there was a time where in the welterweight division, De La Hoya, Whitaker, Ike Corte, who am I missing? All these guys were roaming the same division at the same time, and you're like, okay, can we start fighting each other? And then they did. Mm-hmm. And Oscar actually started that with fighting Ike Corte, and then it all started, and Felix Trinidad, I'm sorry. So they all started fighting each other. But you could say, all right, these guys are legit champs. But now We all forget. I can't remember exactly, all right, who did Ortiz beat? Who did Berto beat? But all I know is, like, no, you weren't the champ at the time. Right. So that's why I really try to be judicious and spell it out, just like saying, hey, Callum Smith was the Ring Magazine super middleweight champion of the world. He had to earn that through tough fights, real fights. So he's the real champ. Here's Canelo. He wins. He's the champ. Caleb Plant definitely should have a say in it because he's got a belt, just like Anthony Joshua should have a say in it. Hey, I've got these belts. I won them in the ring. My resume is actually better than Tyson Fury. So you can say, hey, Tyson Fury is the heavyweight champion of the world, but Anthony Joshua has a say. But I'm telling you, 8 years from now, are we going to remember all this? No, we will not.
No,
and
we will
fans
not.
Certainly won't. No. So I just try to keep it real. And could, you know, you as some sort of conscience of the sport should be better, all right?
I tried to be a conscience of the sport just this past week. I tried to napalm the WBA for what they
did. I heard that on Teddy Atlas's podcast.
Yes.
So when Teddy respects your gangster, that's pretty good. You blew up the WBA.
I loaded up on both barrels on that one. I was prepared.
You
to
got?
Go.
Did you see that fight? Did you score the fight? The Maestre.
I went
Fox
back
fight?
And rescored it like 9-3 for Fox.
Right.
It was.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. Ridiculous. Like that's like you sitting there. You called that fight. Like was like, that feels like it was a turning point in a way. Like that got mainstream attention even.
Yeah.
And part of that's because one of the judges is a racist with some of the racist social media posts she's been putting out there, but. Like it finally the spotlight was placed brightly on the WBA. Now you see them out there like they're trying to order mandatory, trying to eliminate the interim titles, but they've done this.
They're
before.
Covering their ass.
They've
is done what they're doing.
They're
it's
trying to
CYA.
Avoid lawsuits.
Yeah.
They're trying like they have done this before. I believe 6 months to a year from now, we're back in the exact same place with that organization. And this right
no
here,
question.
I mean, how do you handle this? This is a WBA title fight. Like, how do you handle this?
No, this is not for the welterweight championship of the world. And the unfortunate part about having all of these belts, for example, this is a great example of Pacquiao versus Ugas is a great championship-level
yes.
fight. They're both top five welterweights, the deepest division and best division in boxing, and they're top five, right? It's Spence, Crawford, Pacquiao, Porter, Ugas, and make it six, Keith Thurman. Mm. So there's a great top six right there. This is a top six fight, top five fight. It's great. But, like, Pacquiao... You know, also, like, I think was, you know, kind of given the belt. But then he beat Keith Thurman, who had one of those legit belts, was a welterweight champion in the post-Mayweather era. See how hard this is to even for us to remember.
It's tough.
But he beat a legit guy. So Pacquiao having a belt after beating Thurman made sense. Mm. So that you're legit. You beat a real guy who's beaten real guys. He beat Porter. Thurman beat Porter. So it's like that's a real championship belt. But then Ugas wins. He did. I called with the fight that he won the regular belt. He won an interim belt. Then it was the regular belt. And the WBA has a full belt, a regular belt, and then on top a super belt. So come on, man. So Ugas wins a regular belt, and then they elevate him and they take it from Manny because he hadn't fought in 2 years, mm-hmm. which is, in a crazy way, I almost agree with that. You can't keep the title on ice
correct,
forever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like they're making it up as they go along again.
Yeah, don't elevate the guy. Make him fight somebody for fight. Take those two. Take the interim and the regular and have them fight for the actual real title.
Right. So, right. I'm looking at this. It's for a belt. They're talking about it. Is it I'm even looking at this at the top of the screen, and I don't think they realize by saying World Welterweight Championship, you're diminishing Errol Spence.
Yeah.
Spence is regarded as the number one. Look, and Crawford is still out there. It's like, but he should fight somebody.
Yeah.
And I know there's political and promotional ramifications. Mm-hmm. If Crawford listens to this, it's going to be like, yeah, I'd love to. Mm-hmm. I know you would. Everybody seems to want to, and yet it's very rarely does it actually mm-hmm. happen. So I just try to observe to tell fans, this is the championship of the world. It's special. When Joshua was fighting Andy Ruiz, mm-hmm. okay, ding, we're underway. This is the heavyweight championship mm-hmm. of the world. Shouldn't that be special? Shouldn't that mean something? And that's what we try to sell. But over the last 35 years, the sanctioning bodies and promotional outlets and TV networks, they all want it. You know, everyone's working for their own short-term interests. Mm-hmm. This is for the championship. It's like, yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, this is a great fight. It's a living legend, obviously. It's a great fight. But is it for the welterweight championship? No. But there was a day where top 10 fighters clashing was enough.
Mm-hmm.
And
it still is enough. I don't need to have a specific title on the
like
line.
Actually, you know, how about Crawford versus Ugas? Crawford versus Thurman. That's two versus six.
Well,
is that great? Yes.
This is where I think sanctioned bodies can have such a positive impact on the sport. And we're seeing with Crawford Porter, where the WBO says, you know, you are the two top guys.
Right.
We're going to order a purse bid. So either make a deal or Terrence Crawford, you're going to have to give up that belt. And Crawford's not giving up the belt, so they'll have to go to a purse bid, and somebody will win the fight, and we'll get the fight we want. How do we care what how the sausage is made? We want to see the actual fight. And a sanctioning body can be a conduit for that. And too often they're trying to be, you know, as I call it, the WBA, fee-gobbling bloodsuckers, and try to just collect as much money as possible.
I don't know if people even realize, probably people who are listening to your podcast know this, but not only then is there four belts per weight class, which are impossible to gather and hold on to, right? Even Bernard Hopkins, Roy Jones, and Floyd Mayweather eventually start stripping titles, and next thing you know, oh, there's Berto, or there's even Cotto, like with some spurious belt. And as I told Floyd Mayweather years ago, because when I wasn't observing Floyd's title after he beat Zab Judah, I was like, no, that ain't the real welterweight title until you beat Carlos Baldomir. Oh, please, Carlos Baldomir. I'm like, I get it, but he beat Judah, who beat Spinks, who beat, like, that's the actual champ. You know, you've got to follow that lineage. I know lineal gets, people have gone lineal crazy.
Yes.
But there's got to be
it's been weaponized to a degree.
Correct. You know the story behind that, right? I mean, that's when he signed with ESPN, top rank in ESPN, suddenly it was in their interest to say, hey, this guy beat Vladimir Klitschko and he hasn't lost since, which is completely accurate and true. But when you start going lineal, and I called Joe Tess on that when we did the dual fight. I was like, you guys have gone lineal crazy.
Yes.
Bert Sugar never said lineal this much. Suddenly everything is lineal, this, lineal, that. But there is some truth to it that, okay, you were the champ, you retired or you went away or you had troubles and you went away for 3 years, but you haven't lost in the ring. You have a right to come back and try to create a mandate from the public to say, I'm still the real champ. And if these guys fought each other, you know who we had on last week? Amantis Stanionis.
Yep.
Did you
see like him? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I really like him. But, again, he's climbing up like Virgil Ortiz, who you called his fight last week. Wow, sensational welterweights who are now top 10 in this great welterweight division. Stanionis said, I'd like to fight all the top guys. He said, I don't know why all the top guys aren't fighting each other. And then he said, and on a regular basis, like make it like kind of like fight once, twice, three times. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, but if we did that, Amantis, then the sport would be, you know, huge again and you'd be making a ton of money.
We can't have that.
For some reason, no one just sees the big enough picture of that if the top guys fight around Robin. And we talked about this. Imagine if Wilder and Fury had fought each other Wilder and
Joshua.
And Joshua had fought each other when that became big.
Yeah.
It was ready to go about, what, 3 years ago?
Before the Ruiz fight, so 2019.
Yeah. It was so hot. It would have been a global monster. Mm-hmm. They could have fought each other three times in a row. Everybody else is on the outside. Tyson Fury's still retired. He's coming back. Fine, Tyson, do whatever you got to do, but you're gone. And now they could have fought three times. Then as Fury gets back in, whoever the winner is, they could have fought two, three times in 18 months. And it would be big business for everybody. So, yes, it's frustrating to see this for 25 years on a steady basis. It occasionally cracks, though, so I'm always hopeful. And as I mentioned, again, for people out there, I'm not talking 1930s here. I'm talking Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad, Ike Corte. And who am I missing? Pernell Whitaker, who was like an older Pernell Whitaker, but they were all there at 147, and finally everybody started fighting each
other. Mosley, right around there.
Shane Mosley then came up. But yeah, that's a mini golden era. Mm-hmm. It's not quite Hagler, Leonard, and Hearns, not quite, but it's almost there, and we could have a golden era of boxing right in this division alone.
And I don't want to wait, like, Ortiz is kind of like, he wants Terrence Crawford, and I get that because he's number one and he's undefeated and he's been fighting. Golden Boy's done a great job matching him up to this point with, you know, Mean Machine being his last
Virgil
fight.
Virgil
wants Crawford. Oof. But, like, if he can't, like, but I mean, at this point, Brian's like, I don't want to see him against another journeyman. Maybe he's not ready, maybe he isn't, but it's bleeper get off the pot at this point. But I want to see guys like Stanionis. I want to see Ortiz. I want to see Boots Ennis. I want to see these guys start fighting each other now. Like, do we have to wait till they're like 30 before that happens?
Right.
Like,
I think all three of those guys, I don't think they're by any means overripe. Even Ortiz, how old is Ortiz
23.
Now? They're still really young. In fact, that's what I mean. I'm not saying matches your fighter against the toughest guys every time out. No, we don't want career suicide. We don't need you to get beat up. You don't have to bleed for us and get head injuries for us. Do it smartly, but then when you reach the top, when you're top five and you have a belt and there's three other dudes with belts, why don't we all get rich? You know, why don't you all fight each other? And again, cross over to all those fans that you and I speak to all the time, and again, when I'm at MLB Network now or when I was on SportsCenter years ago, everybody's a boxing fan. Oh, I'm a big boxing fan. Do you watch now? No. Oh, well, you know what I really liked? I liked Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler. But yeah, of course you did. They always fought. Hagler was a TV star. He fought every 3 months on HBO. You saw him constantly. You saw Larry Holmes all the time. They became TV stars. Vinny Pazienza got the biggest ratings we ever got on Friday Night Fights because he was a brand name star from the 80s. So even in the 90s, he was still bringing in like 2 million people to see his fights on ESPN on a Friday night.
Yep.
So become a TV star. Like even I'm going to be doing the weigh-in tomorrow with Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. Right? We're going to be sitting on the set doing the weigh-in. And my question for Keith is, because I said, hey, these guys are top five welterweights, and let's list the top five. And he goes, hey, why don't you take Porter out and put me in? I went, oh, Keith, apologies. You could be six. I said, but Keith, can you fight?
Might not even be sixth anymore.
Yeah, like, might not. Yeah, might
you've
not
been off for 2+ years, and you lost your last fight. And before that, you were off for another year and a half prior
so
to
like,
that.
So, like, where is he?
I think he's fought 3 times, 2017.
Right.
He lost the fire in his belly, though. That's just my opinion.
What's that?
I think he lost the fire in his belly a little bit.
Maybe. And look, Sean Porter hasn't.
No.
And yet Porter, has not fought since he fought on our air. And he beat, was it Sebastian Formella? Am I getting the name right?
Yeah.
Formella on our air. No, good. Fight some unbeaten guy from Europe. Cool. Wipe him out. You outboxed him, but you have to get in shape. You have to get on TV. I'd like to see him all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and we don't, and they're not becoming household names. And these MMA guys are.
Yeah.
And the boxing guys aren't. And I'll say it again. Right now, welterweight and heavyweight, we could be in a golden era of boxing. There's no question. And Canelo weight. Wherever Canelo is roaming, that's also could be a golden era.
But that's a good
era.
Transition. The other topic I want to hit you on is Canelo's become a TV star. Canelo stays active. He's out there. He's fighting. He's drawing huge crowds. He's drawing big ratings. And he'll be back in November. You'll be called. You and Canelo reunited.
Oh,
I mean,
I'm so happy.
9-3
Canelo. 10. I can't say that.
That's baseline.
That was our joke because, and actually, there's some truth to it in that I like the style of Canelo.
Yeah.
And I would judge it. It's pleasing to my eye aesthetically. You know
he's
what?
A very easy guy to score fights for, though, like, for the most part, because his punches land clean. I know we said this before. Like the Jacobs fight, it was pretty easy to score that fight because his punches landed clean.
Right. He is kind of a jab, right hand, hook to the body, hook to the head, and it is easy to watch. You know who it reminds me of? You know, Marco Antonio Barrera. I already mentioned his name. A guy who is just fundamentally sound and has straight, hard, crisp punches. That's what I really love. And so I love Canelo. I'm not saying I pre-score fights, but I have a tendency to get excited about Canelo. And people, he just loves Canelo, and he's paid to – they're telling him to – nobody's telling me anything. I like what I see with Canelo, and I think he's been fantastic. I'll throw in something else. We called his fight for DAZN together when he went to Madison Square Garden just before Christmas and fought Rocky Fielding. Mm-hmm. And he almost killed him. He cut him in two. So what? Canelo came back. That guy's got a belt. He's from England. He had fought, in September?
Yep.
Right?
Golovkin. He fought a war with Golovkin September.
Right. So, no.
Yeah. September 2018. September 2018, he fought Golovkin. December 2018, he fought Rocky Fielding. That was the first DAZN fight after the HBO contract expired.
Oh, okay. So, he comes back and fights that fight. So, again, my point is, not everybody, when I ask for, hey, round robin, fight the best guys, not every time out.
No.
You can't. You shouldn't put even a world-class champion through that ringer.
And Canelo got his, and he got exactly what he deserved with Avni Yildirim back in February. That was between Callum Smith and Billy Joe Saunders. Now he's going into another high-level fight against Caleb Plant. And by the way, like, we can debate whether, the odds of Caleb Plant pulling off an upset, but it's the right fight.
Correct.
Like, this is the fight that needs to happen at 168. When they were mentioning Dmitry Bivol, we both like Dmitry Bivol, talented guy, but that didn't really kind of... Like, I need Dmitry Bivol to get in there in California and fight Gilberto Ramirez and, like, have a war with him. Mm. And the winner of that fight will probably have a good mandate to fight Canelo in early 2022.
Right. Or if that's if he beats Beterbiev and becomes heavyweight champion of the world.
Either one.
Like, if he's sitting there, or if Canelo says, I'm going to move up and fight Beterbiev, the light heavyweight champion of the world, that's different. Yeah, but also, Bivol's a tough fight for Canelo, because you're also moving
up against
the big guy.
He might have lost that. Then it's like, oh, God, did you lose a 12-round decision to Bivol? Then it's like, what do you do from there? Like, do you have to rematch
and people don't care. It should be ripe enough. What I'm saying is, I mean, I have a proper understanding of the business of boxing as well, that you don't go to war every time out. You don't want to wear your guy out. But, fight your big fight. Come back. Fight on TV against someone that you know you're going to beat. fine. Mm. But you're a TV show. Get back out there. And also, there's something, too, and I mentioned, you know, Sean Porter fighting Sebastian Formella. You have to go through camp. You have to get in shape. You have to show up on fight week. You have to, you know, you have to go through the rounds. You have to go through that whole process. Go and win that fight. Now, boom, now get back into a top-level fight. So, no, Canelo Plant, look, it's right. He will also then be the world champion at 168. Mm-hmm. And this is my, you know, problem with all these splinter belts. You watch what will happen. They'll strip him of one of those belts. He won't be able to satisfy them.
He should drop them all, frankly. Like, after you win them all, why pay a sanctioning fee?
Kind of Floyd, like, did that, actually. Floyd said, I'm bigger than the belts, and he was right.
There's only a handful of guys that are. Like, and, right. You know, heavyweights usually are. But
I like the guy being the champ. And I like Canelo saying, I'd like to truly unify. So there can be no question. There can be nobody popping up their head like whack-a-mole. Yeah. Going, wait, I've got a belt. No, yeah. Get away. No. Whack. Get away. Stop. So, yeah, fantastic. And Plant has a legitimate gripe to say, wait, you need to deal with me to be the champ at 168.
You've called Plant's, what, last two fights at least?
Maybe three.
Two or three. Yeah. Like, do you see a path to victory there? I mean, my biggest issue with Plant is not his skill level. He's tremendously skilled. He's a decorated amateur, all those things. I don't believe you can go from C-level opponents to the A-level opponent. I think that, you know, iron sharpens iron, and he hasn't had that test.
Yeah.
Even Billy Joe, like, he was equally, in a way, unprepared in terms of resume, but he had David Lemieux and he had a couple other guys that were on there that were B-level kind of ish at least. I don't think Caleb Truax prepares you for Canelo Alvarez. And I think when you get in with this guy, all of a sudden you see how fast he is, you see how strong he is, you see how smart he is. I mean, you know, Terrence Crawford justifiably gets a lot of credit for his mind in the ring, dissecting opponents. Canelo does the exact same thing. Like, he's willing to lose rounds just to set you up for what he's going to give you, like he did with Billy Joe Saunders. So
he's patient.
He's very patient. That's my biggest question for Plant. Like, do you know the level of guy you're getting in there with? Like,
I agree with basically everything you said there, in that there's a level of progression that you need to earn. And he was on his way. He was moving up, fighting, you know, Uzgadagi, guys like that. And then
That fight, though, he was losing like the second half of it. Like, he had some trouble in that second half of that fight. It's just
when that fight even came up with Truax, I thought the same thing. And if you look, Truax's path to that fight is astounding. How he got like a number one ranking.
Talk about rankings. The IBF is making him the number one guy again, or like he's in a position to get the number one ranking again.
Wow,
it's we got the IBF. This is the old Emmanuel Stewart
agent, by the way.
Emmanuel Stewart used to like yell at the IBF because they kept making Tony Thompson Klitschko's mandatory. They kept like, stop giving us Tony Thompson.
I've kind of forgotten now, but I remember Truax, who's a quality, you know, boxer, fighter,
former champion, all that stuff.
Fought at the highest level, but his last couple of years, like, he's had a draw, no contest. He got sick for a fight that he was supposed to fight, and then, you know, got bowed out last minute, and he still got a number one, and then got a fight against Plant. So inexplicable. But you're right, Plant. I know he's had injuries, he's had hand injuries and that sort of thing, but you've got to stay in the game. I don't know how these guys do it. Like, even Sean Porter, how do you stay sharp at the top, highest level when you're not fighting? Not that long ago, again, I'm talking in the 90s, in the 80s, Floyd Mayweather, again, I'll use Floyd because everybody knows Floyd now. Floyd was fighting constantly when he was lightweight champ, when he was junior lightweight champ. He's fighting every 3 months. You've got to stay sharp. Deontay Wilder, like, you know, he comes back and it's like, oh, let me go right into a Fury fight. We're going to be saying the same thing for that. Like, you haven't fought at all in all this time, and you think you're just going to step to Fury and outbox him and win rounds or poleax him with your right hand? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you be better served? Get in there with a guy, and I don't want to say a bum, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Get in there with
Stay
someone
busy.
You know you're going to drill. Get your standard former college football player turned boxer. Mm-hmm. Drill him, but go through those motions of camp, training, showing up the week of the fight, media sessions, get your mind set for all of that. So I agree with you with Plant. You know, he was kind of waiting because this is the big kahuna, right? But waiting for Canelo and getting that fight is not the same thing as being as ready as you can for Canelo. And again, Canelo is peaking. He's looked fantastic these last bunch of fights. The way he moved his head against Callum Smith, we called that together. It's like, look at this head movement. And then he waits and he picks his spots, and then he looks like he's just going to chop you in half.
Backing down a guy that is 6 inches taller than him, naturally bigger than him, just stalking him around the ring. And using a tactic I'd never seen before, which is intentionally trying to blow up his bicep.
Yeah.
Like intentionally hitting him in the arm.
Rocky Marciano style, right? Yeah, you'd hit you on the arm and said eventually that arm will stop working.
Like usually it's accidental, though, if somebody hits you on the arm. This guy's targeting your arm. Very few fighters are able to do that.
Yeah. So I'm with you on that.
It was a strategic decision. Like I get the business side of it, like, right? You want to protect that belt because you know Canelo wants it. Mm. So you hold on, you don't fight David Benavidez because you might lose David Benavidez and lose $7 million. So I get the business side of it. I just don't go into this fight with a ton of optimism that plants the guy to shock the world. You know?
Right, and you know, to your point, let's say he's in a Billy Joe Saunders situation, which is round five. You're boxing pretty well. Mm-hmm. You're moving. You've got to show a lot of respect, but you're moving, and maybe you're winning some rounds. Mm-hmm. Now, when you reach back to dig deep and stay at that work rate, stay busy, and stay on your toes so you're not standing flat-footed in front of Canelo so he chops you in half, do you have that wherewithal and experience to do that? Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to do that without having lived through, again, the wars, right? Iron sharpens iron. Anthony Joshua, right? We called that fight together against Andy Ruiz, the second fight. You know, I was asking his sparring partners when we were out in Saudi Arabia, can he move and box for 12 rounds? Because I haven't seen that. And they said, yes, he can. Mm-hmm. We saw it. And if you remember, but look at the resume. Look at all the fights that he's had. Look at the guys that Joshua has faced, amateur and then pro. He had been through so many wars. When he went and dug, you know, he reached back to dig for something in camp, sparring a ton. So he lost 11 pounds sparring. Mm-hmm. Think of that. He was he's a body beautiful. He lost 11 pounds from sparring. So when he reached down deep, when Ruiz suddenly threw a combination that, whoops, almost took off my head, he was still there and then won what we now look at as an easy night, easy decision. But we know, not easy. Not easy coming back from a loss. Not easy losing that weight and being a guy who can box for 12 rounds consistently and get that points win.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. That just reminds me of the Friday before the fight. Like, you're walking that little area that we have at the hotel at outside. AJ, I cross paths with him, and he walks up to me. He's like, hey, man. I'm like, hey. He's like, so how do you think I should fight this guy tomorrow? Says it to me. I'm like, and you know AJ, like, I think he was actually asking. Like, I think he was just sort of, like, trying to gather opinions of some kind. I think he was pretty nervous about that Ruiz rematch.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
There's no question. But that's the template. For coming back,
yeah.
He was humiliated at the Garden by Ruiz. We were there. He was embarrassed. It is his U.S. debut. It's his first pro loss, and he got beaten down. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even a one-shot deal where you could say, well, he caught me. No, he caught you 30 times. Mm-hmm. So that's your fault. And he got beaten down and kind of quit. Mm-hmm. And so remember that aftermath. He stayed in New York. He stayed with friends. He went back in the gym and started digging immediately and working at it. And again, that's my concern with Wilder, is that all these excuses, lack of activity. Obviously, the shutdown from the pandemic didn't help.
Affects everybody.
But it doesn't look good the way he's reacting to things. And in order to come back and actually win the fight in the ring, you know, it's a humbling sport. And a lot of guys who lose are, you know, for that first time, never quite the same. Like Ricky Hatton, Pacquiao, you know, he lost to Mayweather, lost to Pacquiao, and he was just kind of not the same. He's a great fighter, but it was like, man, and I remember saying at the time, hey, Ricky, you lost to number one and number two in the world. Mm-hmm. You picked on one and two. So, okay, maybe you're only the seventh best fighter in the world. Okay, you can still rule a weight class, but some people don't react well to it. So I wonder, I keep going back to Wilder, but I keep wondering about that. Speaking of which, I'll bring it back to Canelo. Mm. Canelo's loss to Mayweather. The way Canelo conducted himself in the last couple of rounds against Floyd, because you know Floyd will just wear you down and basically break your spirit. Yep. Did it to Chico Corrales and then knocked him out. That's what everyone was kind of waiting for. In that fight against Canelo. Canelo fought hard those last few rounds not to be embarrassed, to say, no, I'm not here to be pot-shotted. Now you have your distance and range, and you're picking me apart, but you're not really hurting me. You can outpoint me, but you're not beating me up. Mm-hmm. And that showed me this guy's going to go somewhere. And that loss didn't break him, didn't break his spirit, and we see what he's become. But it's not easy. It's a psychological game. It's not easy losing that first one, and you have to go through an awful lot. So, right, to even bring it back to Caleb Plant, like, you know, it's, you know, if you haven't lived through that there's no way of experiencing it, knowing it, and then having it in your arsenal, you know, to dig deep and then suddenly find a way in the later rounds to, I'm not withering, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I keep missing this guy's head. It's exhausting. And yet I'm going to stay in this fight, and maybe I find a way.
You know what he needed? He needed a in-between fight against a Mexican at 168 pounds that we both know that is looking for one more fight that
Sergio.
Is over the age of 40.
He needed Sergio Mora. The return of the Latin snake.
Sergio, who is retired. Until you throw a number at him that will make him come out of retirement.
We already know what that number is. There needs to be seven of them, and then he's back.
I don't think there needs to be seven of them.
Six?
I think low six might get him back in the gym.
Right, and to your point, right, you need to fight a guy, a cutie pie.
Sergio
is a cutie pie. Sergio knows how to box, again, yeah. And this is our former comrade. And when you give him a hard time, I say, well, this guy beat Vernon Forrest. So like that, I said, time. Sergio, tell him you beat Vernon Forrest, who beat Mosley twice, who beat De La Hoya twice. Like, tell him that. You could just,
People reply to like the stuff I do say. Half the stuff I don't say is way worse. Like, it's just.
Or you say off camera.
Even like, sometimes he'll be like, you know, he'll be talking about Virgil Ortiz last fight. He's like, this is what happens when you're a power puncher. And this party wants to go, how would you know?
Right. But that is
save
the type
of the TV
that's
show.
The guy that you fight, because the guy knows how to box and he has experience. And if you're not at the top of your game, that guy will outpoint you. Paulie Malignaggi, same sort of thing. Cutie pie. That guy will outpoint you if you're not on your game. So, right, again, this is the theme now. Get back in the ring, go through the training camp, have to plan, have to plot, have to strategize, get in shape, make weight, show up at the fight, travel, go through the media sessions, through the weigh-in, boom, and blah, blah. It's an event. It just builds that experience to the point where, and being sitting here in the Grand Garden Arena, I'm reminded of many of the lessons I've learned from Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd eventually got to the point where he was just a machine on Big Fight Week. And he would come up and he would say, the key to the big fight is your composure. You saw Floyd on a Big Fight Week used the least amount of energy possible. Mm-hmm. He didn't push and shove people. He didn't go crazy. Oh, maybe he does now because it hypes fights, and he's fighting YouTube guys anyway.
Yeah.
But at the time when he was fighting the best of the best, he would come in and know this guy's using energy. This guy's excited. This guy's got all his friends with him. This guy's pumping himself up and yelling at me and cursing me out. I'm not. All I'm doing is executing my game plan that I did in the gym for the past 3 months with my Uncle Roger.
Yeah.
Right? And that was his mantra. But it was like, go out, execute the game plan. It's very much a craft and a sport and a mind game. And he had mastered it. Mm-hmm. So again, I keep using Floyd just as the template, saying, you want to follow a path to success? Follow that path.
Nice.
Stay locked in with your business.
And when you get into the ring, and that fight with Canelo and Plant, probably here at the Grand Garden Arena, based on some of the logistics, I don't think the other venues are available that night. 17,000 strong, mostly Canelo fans, probably 95% Canelo fans. That's going to be an atmosphere, man. That's going to be...
I tell you, it's draining. You will see many times in a big fight, the big fighter, the opponent, by the third round, suddenly it's like, wow, where's his legs? Mm-hmm. His zip isn't there because he used his energy during the week, used your energy at the weigh-in. I'll give you an example. Lennox Lewis, Michael Grant. Grant was yelling, and I was at the press conference. Grant is yelling at Lennox. He's screaming. He's like, this is my time. Blah, 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 blah. And Lennox is just sitting there looking at him going, okay. Waited, and then he drilled Grant. Grant used all his energy. But I'm saying it's a natural human reaction. You get into the big fight, and the top guys will tell you the big fight, the mega fight, is different. And Plant will be suddenly hit with all of these media requests and friend requests and ticket requests and everything. And even though he can insulate himself, you know, and have his wife taking care of things and his camp taking care of things, and yeah, he's not a guy who has a traveling circus, and yet it will test him in a way he's never been tested. You know, the cauldron of being here in this rare air, there's a price to be paid. Whereas Canelo will be up in that suite that we visited, shooting some pool with his guys.
Completely relaxed.
Completely in that nice white sweatsuit.
He's now in pajamas at all times now. I mean, that just tells you everything you need to know about Canelo's mindset. He doesn't get out of pajamas all week.
Right. So but that's it. He learned those lessons too. Conserve your energy. Mm-hmm. So it will be difficult. You get into the big fight, it's tough. Again, look at Pacquiao. You've never seen a less threatening guy in fight week than Pacquiao. And yet it goes ding on a Saturday night, and it's war.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best example, I think, of a professional prize fighter in that way. Like we were talking about the weigh-in tomorrow, because I'm going to be part of the team for Fox that we'll have it on live. And I want to ask, like, Keith Thurman, what is it like to be at the weigh-in? And you see this little guy who's totally non-threatening. Mm-hmm. He's not even tense. Like, his shoulders aren't tense. He's not puffing up, going, oh, I'm so bad. He's just kind of smiling.
I saw Ugas at the press conference the other day where he's got a stone face. Packers look at the camera, big smile. He's happy to be here. He's like, hey.
Just chilled out.
42, just hanging out.
Showing, you know, and right, wasting no energy whatsoever. And then the bell rings, and it's war. Mm-hmm. Save it for the ring. Well, the only thing that matters is how do you box on Saturday night? Mm.
Well, I think the winner should face Lovebridge McBride. What was his name? Who was the guy you just made up, the fictional fighter from?
Livingstone Bramble was the lightweight champion of the world. Show some respect. Oh, my God.
If Livingstone Bramble is alive, shout out to you.
Yeah, he might be out. Might be outside at one of the tables. Be careful.
Brian Kenny will be on the call. Fox pay-per-view. Manny Pacquiao. Your Danis Ugas. Always good to catch up, man.
Thanks, Chris. Take care.
Boxing legend Manny Pacquiao returns to the ring this Saturday for the first time in 2 years, and FanDuel Sportsbook's given new customers exclusive 30-1 odds on either fighter to win when he takes on Yordanis Ugas. That's right. Now's the perfect time. Give FanDuel a shot. You can win $150 on a $5 bet. FanDuel's always looking for ways to hook you up, exclusive odds boosts, promotion, so much more. That's why they're America's number one sports book. It's why it's the sports book I use. Don't miss out. Your chance to win 150 bones on a $5 bet when Manny Pacquiao returns to the ring against Yordanis Ugas. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up, promo code's Colin. Promo code is always Colin to get in on the action. Promo code Colin, C-O-L-I-N. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, or New Jersey. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required, $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, and 1-800-GAMBLER in Jersey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jessi Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. I've been a journalist for 2 decades, writing cover stories for Business Week, Fortune, and Wired. And now, every Monday, I bring you conversations with people who are thinking deeply about work and where it fits into our lives. Like Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella on growth mindsets.
The learn-it-all does better than the know-it-all.
Or MacArthur Genius winner Angela Duckworth on talent versus grit.
Your long-term effort and your long-term commitment are surprisingly important.
Each episode delivers pragmatic advice for right now. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Manny, it will be Ugas, not Spence. You go from southpaw to orthodox. One of the biggest fights of the year turns into a pretty good one, but not the fight you were kind of looking for. How are you feeling about all these changes in the last couple of days?
I feel okay. I'm ready to the fight. I'm excited for this opponent, Ugas. She's the one who took my belt. The WWE gave it to him. We are going to settle it down in the ring.
Was it a big shock to you to hear Spence had to pull out?
Yeah, but I'm kind of disappointed. But health is the most important thing. So I'm praying for him for fast recovery. But Errol Spence, I hope that his operation is doing well.
So when you make a change from one fighter to another who have different styles, what changes for you in your training camp?
For this new opponent, totally change our style, change our plan, because we're fighting a right-handed. So, but it's not hard for me to change in our strategy, because I've been fighting a right-handed.
So when you look at, you know, this is your first fight in over 2 years. At any point in the last 2 years, did you think that maybe you were done with boxing?
Based on my condition and my feelings, I feel like I can still fight. I mean, I love workout, and boxing is my passion, so I still believe that I can fight.
Why did you want to fight? Because you're a guy that your legacy is secure. You're a first ballot Hall of Famer whenever you decide to retire. Why do you want to keep fighting?
Because boxing is my passion. I love doing this and happy doing this. I'm enjoying doing this. I mean, I'm enjoying to have training camp and discipline yourself, preparing for the fight like this.
You know, we've heard, Manny, over the last couple of years about different fighters that you might fight, whether it was Mikey Garcia or Terrence Crawford. Why didn't any of those fights happen for you over the last couple of years?
I think it's something wrong with the talks and negotiation about how to deal with. So sometimes it happened that way.
When you look at this coming fight, is it possible this could be your last fight?
It could be, or there are more. Like I said, one at a time, because of my age, I can retire anytime. But like I said, I'm enjoying doing this. Boxing is my passion, and happy doing this, giving inspiration to the boxing fans, especially the Filipino people.
You mentioned those Filipino people. I think a lot of people are expecting you to run for president of the Philippines sometime next year. A spokesman for you even said last month that you would probably do that. Do you plan on doing that?
I'm a politician, so everything can happen. But right now, I'm focused on August 21. So after that, we can talk about politics.
What are the best and worst parts about being a politician?
The best is happy helping the people. And the worst is there's a people that trying to ruin your name and make a fabricated story to just to, you know, they're pulling you down.
Yeah, you've seen some of the nasty side of politics over the last year. What's that been like?
There's so many evil people that trying to make a fabricated story to put you down and grab you down. But as long as you're in the right path, protecting the people, fighting for the people, then you have nothing to worry about.
You ready for it maybe to get even nastier as your political career goes forward?
Oh, like I'm a fighter outside and inside and outside the ring. So, and I always be a fighter.
I want to ask you, Manny, about you and Freddie. You've been together for most of the last 20 years. As you come towards the end of your career, what has that relationship with Freddie meant to you?
Freddie and I, we're not only like a boxer or a trainer. We're a friend, we're a family, or best friend, like that.
What's the most important thing he did for you, the biggest thing he did for you as a trainer?
Teamwork, like that. Teamwork, good guy, friendly. Build our relationship. not only a boxer or in a trainer, but also a like a friend, a best friend.
When you look back at those early years with him, I mean, what kind of differences did he make in your fighting style?
There's a lot. There is a lot, especially moving around and timing like that. Some those are the counterpunch.
You know, when you left Freddie, everybody knows it, for just one fight a couple of years ago. But for the most part, you've stuck with him through good times and bad. Why have you always kind of found your way back to Freddie every single fight?
Oh, we didn't. We never lived Freddie. It just happened that I trained in the Philippines, and I told him that Bobo will take care of that. And for this fight only.
You know, when you look around boxing, you see fighters change trainers 2, 3, 4, 5 times sometimes in their careers. What do you think about when you see that, when you've really had one guy for most of yours?
It means I'm 61.
Is it? I mean, do you think it's made a difference for you having just one voice for most of those years?
Yeah, I don't want to keep changing coaching staff and trainer like that. It depends on you as a boxer. It depends on you how to prepare yourself in a fight, and also how you train hard, how you make plans, how you do techniques. The trainer also can contribute that. So you have to stand on your own feet and make thinking and plan.
What's one thing you and Freddie have in common outside of boxing?
Easy to understand. Mm. Understanding each other.
Well, Manny, good luck to you on August 21st. I know it's been a busy week. Change of opponents, different training, kind of training camp. Good to talk to you, man. Thanks for joining me.
All right. Thank you.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.